Well, in the old days, way back in like 2003, the typical hi, how are you conversation would go like this. Hello, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? I'm fine. Thank you for asking. Today, it's a little bit different. In 2016, that goes more, sounds similar, but there's some differences. It goes kind of like this. Hi, how are you? How am I? Oh, I'm busy. I'm too busy. How are you doing? Oh, I'm crazy busy. Crazy busy is a good summary of the way many of us experience life. We seem to be living in a whole new world, a connected world that is always, always, always buzzing and humming with something new. I was at lunch with a good friend a couple of months ago, and we'd met, sat down and said hello, and had our drink orders in. Hadn't made our order for our food yet, but I noticed in the, not even 15 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, he kept looking at his watch. He'd look down at his watch, and he'd kind of nod at me like he really wasn't paying attention to me, and then he'd look at his watch again, and finally I said, what's going on? Do you have to be somewhere else? You seem like you're really worried about the time. You keep checking your watch. He said, I do? Oh, I'm sorry. It's a new Apple Watch. You know, the Apple Watch, and it says it's constantly buzzing on my wrist here, telling me I've got a text or I've got an email or something else, and he had to take it off and put it in his pocket in order to stop looking at it. That's kind of the way our world is these days, isn't it? It's just, we're just constantly being being attacked by a barrage of emails and texts and notes and information. You know what the, by the way, you know what the advertising line is for the Apple Watch, don't you? Never miss what matters. How do you know what matters if you never miss anything? You know, there's something now these days called FOMO. Have you heard about this? FOMO, F-O-M-O. It's short for fear of missing out. And this is an actual thing. People talk about this. They're afraid that if they disconnect, if they turn off their phone, if they don't check their email, if their computer isn't on, if the tablet's not buzzing or humming, they must be missing something. Oh my gosh, I haven't got the latest word about him or her or that. Or, oh, there's this great cat video that I need to see. It's called FOMO. It's actually a real thing. I was struck on Friday night. Sermon notes were mostly done. I was watching the Royals baseball game. Julie and I were sitting on the couch just getting caught up on the day, watching the game, and they were showing crowd shots. You know how they show crowd shots? I think about half the people. This was not in between innings. This was during the game. They show a shot of 10, 15, 20 people sitting in the stands. These are the good seats right behind home plate. Half of them were doing what? Looking at their phones. You paid $100 to sit in that seat to come and look at your phone while the baseball game is going on. Now, if you follow me on Facebook, you'll know, hey, Glenn, I've seen you post on Facebook while you've been at baseball games. Yes, yes, I do. I like to take a picture of Julie and me or my boys and I and throw it on Facebook and say, go Royals. That's kind of a fun thing to do, to connect with the world. But I made a promise on Friday night to change that. I used to go to baseball games. This is a nerdy thing to admit, but I used to go to baseball games, have a scorecard. I bought my own scorecard that I kept at home. And I take a pencil and keep score of the game, track the pitches and everything. And what would happen when I do that is I'd forget about everything else. I'd forget about the church and my worries about the budget or this or that or the sermon coming up. I would just find myself caught up in the game. Is he going to throw a two-seam fastball here or a slider? And that's all I thought about. It's not busyness. That's what psychologists call bliss, where you're able to just get so caught up in whatever it is before you, you forget. It's almost as though time just stops. I made that promise, so now you hold me to it. If you see me post on Facebook, you come on and say, hey, I thought you weren't going to do this. We need to note that busyness really isn't the issue. You can be very, very busy watching a baseball game, gardening, reading, doing some writing, whatever it is that you're able to just get completely lost in. That's not busyness, it's bliss. It's that sense of not worrying about anything else going on around you because you're so caught up in whatever it is that for you is that sense of bliss. We need to also note that technology is not the problem either. The fact that you and I have phones in our pockets or our purses that has more computing power than the Apollo 11 spacecraft that went to the moon is not a bad thing. I mean, on my phone, I've got notes right now about scores and baseball teams and things going on. On my phone, I can order lunch. I can order tickets to the movies. I can order a cab. I can check my health. I can check my heart rate. I can check a host of things. None of that's bad. My brother Dave and I are very close. We've been close all our lives. He likes to watch the same teams that I like to watch, and so we text during the games. He lives in California. I'm in Kansas City. It's a great way to stay connected with my family, with my close friends. I'm sure the same is true for you. But there's a danger in all of this. Edward Hallowell, who wrote the book Crazy Busy that inspired this series, says that there's a danger of becoming addicted. And he's serious about this. About becoming addicted to all the stuff, the constant ding or buzz or hum or ring or whatever you've got your phone or your tablet or your computer set to do. That we constantly, in fact, there's even almost a feeling of euphoria when you open up your computer and you see that you've got 19 emails. Oh, what's going on? Got to check in. And the next thing you know, we are addicted and caught up. And not only that, but Hallowell argues that what eventually happens is a sense of being overwhelmed. Of being completely overwhelmed, of feeling like I'm never going to catch up. The emails keep coming, the texts keep coming, the buzzes and the hums and the dings are constantly going off in my life, and I can't even. And then when I don't hear them, I want to go find them. And when that happens, he argues that we lose a sense of hope. I'll never catch up, I'll never get there. Our optimism, our hopefulness, are squelched, crushed even, by this constant demand for our attention. 2,500 years ago, an old Hebrew poet, he didn't know about modern technology, not like we do, but he knew about this issue. He sat down and in two words gave us a cure for this. Be still. Be still. Pay attention to the breath in your lungs, to that muscle in your chest that beats. Be still and know that I am God. It's a word spoken from heaven itself, to you and to me, to us, to the world, to find a place where no matter what is going on around us, we can find a sense of peace. This text was probably written at a time of war. If not in the middle of actual war, there was a war about to begin. Some scholars think, and this is how I tend to think, is that it was written when the enemies of Israel were gathered about the hills around Jerusalem. They could see them there. And this poet composes this word as a way of saying, yes, our enemies are there. Yes, we're about to experience the tumult of war, the roar of the cannon, the roar of of the battle cry, all of that. And yet we can still find, in the presence of God, our refuge, our strength. In stillness, we can remind ourselves that everything that is around us does not drown out the presence of God. And there's something to note in this text too. This text doesn't say that God will fly in like a helicopter. Did you see that on the news last week? Those soldiers were stranded on Long's Peak in Colorado and said they had to fly a helicopter in and pluck those guys off the top of the mountain in order to save their lives. Sometimes I wish God would do that. You know, God would come in with a helicopter and just pluck me out of whatever mess I'm in the middle of. But the promise of this psalm is different. What it says is that God comes and is with us in the middle of it, whatever it is, of the war, of the storm, of the mess that you may have made of your own life. The promise is not that God pulls us out, but rather that God comes and moves in with you and with me. You see, the point is this: in our FOMO worried culture, in our fear of missing out world, our failure to be still, to take one step at a time, to breathe in deeply, causes us to miss out on the presence of God. The first 9 verses of this text assure us that no matter what's going on, God will be there. And then there's this instruction to stop. Jesus did something like this when he was with the disciples. You might remember the story. He was on the Sea of Galilee. They're in a fishing boat, a small boat. If you've been to Israel, they've got replicas of those boats. You can get out on the water, and it's kind of fun. But in a storm, they're dangerous. In a storm, you can be capsized and drown. This happened all the time on the Sea of Galilee. These storms came up out of nowhere, like a thunderstorm on the Kansas Plains. These would come roaring across the desert and turn that little Sea of Galilee into a roaring, terrible, awful, horrible ocean filled with gigantic waves. Well, Jesus is asleep in the boat in the middle of one of these storms, and his disciples are freaking out. They're afraid, and they're frightened. They're saying, "Lord, wake up. How can you be sleeping? Aren't you afraid? Don't you see we're about to die?" And Jesus wakes up, and he says, "Peace, be still." And a lot of folks wonder, is he speaking to the storm, or is he talking to the disciples? It's almost like he's saying, "Y'all, just hush." That's the Georgia translation of the Bible. And he says it with such clarity, with a strong exclamation point, that maybe he's really saying it to the disciples, but Mother Nature herself says, "Oh, he's being clear," and the storm is calm. You see, the promise, the gospel writer wants us to see what was true in Psalm 46 was still true in Jesus' day, is still true for us. In the middle of the storm, we can find the peace and the stillness that God intends for us, that God will still be present. Now, I suppose it might be a bit much to declare that we're at war with busyness and technology, to say that email and texts and all that is a storm, a frenzied storm that's swamping our lives and causing us maybe almost to lose our lives. Maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration. Or is it? Is it? This busyness epidemic seems to be everywhere. We started a group for men here at the church. It actually meets in a pub. It's called Faith Pub. Nice little group, about 30, 35 guys gather every Thursday night. Going to start it up again in the fall. We met for 6 weeks this spring. At our closing gathering, we met at Dan Jensen's house. He served us burgers, and it was an enjoyable evening, but we got into this topic. And one of the guys, a dad, said, "You know, as I look back over the last 10 years of my life, I hate to confess that I've missed a ton that's happened in the lives of my children because I've been so caught up in trying to stay one step ahead constantly at work. Never letting go, never stopping. I've been to their events, their games, their programs, and missed half of it because my brain was somewhere else." Another guy in the group, a retired one, he's almost 70 years old now. He said, "You know what's happened to me is my ego tells me in order for me to really matter, I need to do as much as I can. So I'm constantly, constantly, constantly saying yes to every volunteer opportunity that comes up because I want to prove. My ego is telling me, you got to prove. You got to make sure people know how important you are. You're still important. I'm retired. It's my chance to relax. But no, I'm not going to relax. I'm going to make sure people know I can still get it done." This is almost at epidemic portions. Maybe we are caught in a battle with the storm of life as it is today. Like I said, the old psalmist, he didn't have an Apple Watch buzzing on his wrist. He didn't have to worry about checking his email. But maybe in the face of calamity and war and the storms of life, he got so caught up in his own fear and worry and anxiety, he forgot that God was still there, that God was present in the middle of it. You see, what this instruction to stillness does is it allows us to be quiet enough, long enough, to pay attention to what really matters. Halliwell, in his book, he points out that one of the problems we have is we think we can multitask. How many of you, go ahead and confess, a lot of people this morning at 9 o'clock did, go ahead and confess, how many of you try to multitask, do it all the time? Yeah, me too, my hand is up, I should both hands up. If I'm on the phone, I'm probably making some notes about something else, looking at my computer, checking my email, and making sure, and checking my text every once in a while in case of text. That's like four things. What Halliwell says is, and I needed to hear this, maybe you do too, what happens when we do that is we do none of them well. Maybe you can accomplish them, but at the end of the day, you've done nothing well. You've not really gotten where you need to be because we're just constantly being pulled. The illustration he uses is this. If you play tennis and you're a pretty good tennis player, Now go out and try to play with two tennis balls. Now try to play with three. Maybe you can keep up. Maybe you can get into a little bit of a rhythm, but you're not going to be, unless your name is Serena Williams, and she lost yesterday, but unless your name is Serena or Rafael Nadal or one of those guys, you're not going to play very well with two or three tennis balls going at the same time. But when you focus on that one thing, the next thing you know is you're done and you can move on. Again, like I said, the promise of Psalm 46 is not a God who comes in and on a helicopter and pulls us out of the fray. I would love for God to come by and say, now, Glenn, now look, here's your to-do list for the day. Focus on this. Focus. No, none of that. None of that will happen. Instead, this word reminds us that no matter what is happening, God is present there. I was having a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a young minister friend of mine. He's 35 years old. He's a rising superstar. I'll tell you his name someday. I won't today. He's a rising superstar in our denomination. He can preach. He can teach. He's got a sweet, kind, gracious pastor's heart, but he's a bit overwhelmed. He said, Glenn, I'm not sure I can do ministry. He's in a big church. He's the youngest senior minister in the history of his church. It's not quite country club size, but it's up there. It's very complex, lots of moving parts, and he was getting real emotional. He just said, it's impossible. It's just impossible to do all the things. I don't know what to do. I said, you know, you're a star. You're going to do great. And he said, that's nice. Thanks. But honestly, I'm just overwhelmed. It's impossible. Thought about him yesterday. And I'm going to send him this quote. I was watching all the news stories and reading online a little bit about Muhammad Ali and his amazing life. Ali was the greatest of all time, not just because he was an incredible athlete, but he also was sort of a street philosopher. He had some great wisdom. Listen to his words. He says, impossible is just a word thrown around by small men who find it easier to live in the world they've been given than to explore the power they have to change it. Impossible is not a fact, it's an opinion. Impossible is potential. Impossible is temporary. Impossible is nothing. I'm going to send that quote to my friend later this afternoon. I'll send him the whole sermon, but highlight that quote. I want him to know that he can make a choice. He does not have to accept the world that's been given to him, this constant barrage of stuff. He can rather choose a life that invites him to stillness in the middle of the storm. I'll remind him, too, of what Jesus said. With God, all things are possible. All things. So, of course, this brings us to the one thing that we try to avoid by staying busy all the time, by constantly being connected to the tablets and the phones and the computers and all the rest. The one thing, according to Halliwell, that we're trying to avoid when we get into all this busyness is the fact that we're going to die. You probably didn't come to church today thinking, I hope Glenn talks about death. But it's a fact. Every one of us has but one life to live. The busyness maybe helps us avoid ever letting that thought get in our brains, but it's true. A few days ago, I saw something from Richard Rohr that I posted on Facebook. He emphasizes basically the same point. He says there's five truths. Number one, life is hard. Number two, you are not that important. Number three, your life is not about you. Number four, you are not in control. Number five, you are going to die. I posted that on Facebook. My mom came on Facebook and she said, not buying this. And then my mom and I got into a little bit of an argument. You can read it. You can read it on Facebook if you want to. It's a dumb thing to do, argue with your mom on Facebook, by the way. She's 80. She's a sweetheart. She's an elder in her church. She's chair of the worship committee. She's been a great mom to me. But then I posted the rest of what Richard Rohr said about these truths and the fact that when you accept them, you're actually then set free to live your life. To live the life that God's given you, to not worry and be caught up in all the stuff because it's not about you and you've only got one life. Now go live it. That in so many ways is the simple truth of this text. When we find the peace that God intends for us, when we give up on trying to fight death, we are set free to be still and live. You see, the promise of Easter is not that God rescues us from death. but that God goes with us through death with the final word that it is not the end. Be still and know.